Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
And support for KAXE comes from Timberlake Restaurant in Grand Rapids, offering fresh baked popovers, crafted cocktails, and menu items such as walleye a la Ritz or chicken Kiev. Information about the dinner menu is available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
And we receive support from First State Bank of Big Fork with branches in Big Fork, Kellyer, Big Fork and Kellyer, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device. Hometown banking at its best since 1912. FSBBigFork.com. Member FDIC.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you. Now it's time for Headlines. Next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. President Trump says he's concerned about reports on the rising number of protesters killed in Iran. NPR's Tamara Keith reports he's telling the demonstrators to keep going and that help is on the way.
In an interview that aired on CBS News, anchor Tony DeCoppel asked Trump about reports that Iran may begin hanging protesters this week.
We will take very strong action. If they do such a thing, we will take very strong action.
And this strong action you're talking about, what's the end game?
The end game is to win. I like winning.
Asked how he defines winning, Trump mentioned Venezuela, military actions from his first term that took out terrorist leaders, and the strikes on Iran's nuclear program. It's still not clear precisely what Trump's objectives are in Iran, but he did say he wants to make Iran great again. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
President Trump says NATO should help the U.S. get Greenland and that anything other than having the semi-autonomous Danish territory under U.S. control is unacceptable. This hours before Vice President Vance and Secretary of State Rubio are set to meet at the White House today with foreign ministers of Greenland and Denmark. On social media, Trump again said the U.S. needs Greenland for national security and that NATO should support his efforts to prevent Chinese or Russian influence. Juna Berthelsen is a member of Greenland's parliament.
Having a meeting, being able to sit down and seek diplomatic solutions is what we've been seeking from the whole beginning.
Greenland's prime minister says the island territory will remain with Denmark. And although the three governments have met before, today's meeting is the first call to discuss Trump's repeated threats to get Greenland. Last week, he said he was going to do something on them, whether they like it or not. A Mississippi man accused of setting fire to a synagogue with a history dating back to 1890 has been indicted on state charges. He's already been charged with arson in federal court. 19-year-old Stephen Spencer Pittman is accused of setting fire to Jackson, Mississippi's only synagogue, Beth Israel Congregation. Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Shamira Muhammad has more.
The charges carry a hate crime enhancement, meaning harsher penalties if the felony was committed because of the perceived race or religion of the victim. He faces up to 60 years of prison on the state charges alone. Pittman is a former honor student of a well-known Catholic school. The Catholic Diocese of Jackson has condemned the actions attributed to Pittman. And Hinds County District Attorney Jody Owen says, quote, "Crimes motivated by hate and directed at places of worship strike at the core of who we are as a community." For NPR News, I'm Shamira Muhammad in Jackson, Mississippi.
Less than a half hour to go to the opening bell on Wall Street. U.S. futures contracts are lower. This is NPR. The Environmental Protection Agency is no longer considering the dollar value of health gains from air pollution regulations. As NPR's Alejandro Burundo reports, air pollution experts worry that could make it easier to weaken such regulations.
For years, the EPA has compared the costs for an industry to clean up pollution to the benefits to Americans' health. For example, cleaning up pollution from soot keeps people from getting asthma or having a heart attack or even dying. And the EPA has put a dollar value on that better health. That's changing. EPA now says those dollar estimates of savings are too uncertain to use. And that could make it easier to roll back air protection rules, according to New York University environmental law expert Richard Derves. He says rollbacks can look good.
But it looks good only because you ignore the main consequence of the rollback, which is the additional negative impact on public health.
Air pollution regulations have saved hundreds of thousands of lives each year, according to previous EPA estimates. Alejandra Burunda, NPR News.
The World Health Organization is calling on countries to increase taxes on sugary drinks and alcoholic beverages because of health issues, including obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and cancers. The median tax on sugary sodas is just about 2% around the world, far lower than the tax on tobacco products, which is closer to 50 or 60% on average. Consumption of sugary drinks is up 14% globally since 2013. I'm Janine Herbst, and you're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Sony Pictures Classics, presenting The Choral, a film starring Ralph Fiennes as a choir master in 1916 England, determined to lead a local choral society as war rages, opens Friday in theaters.
It is 8:06 on the Wednesday morning show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson. And the Bemidji Downtown Alliance is planning a chocolate walk on Valentine's Day. Here to talk more about it is Bemidji Downtown Alliance members Molly Miller and Heidi Myrie. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So first off, how is the weather out there? It was very cold when I got here. Is it still...
Yes, it's colder than the last couple days, that's for sure. Although I didn't notice as much wind today.
Last night it was blowing.
Yeah, it really was.
So I'm very curious, what entails a chocolate walk?
So this will be our first ever chocolate walk in Bemidji. And essentially what it is, it's a ticketed event for our community to come and have a fun experience downtown. And basically they go to each participating business and they get to get a chocolate treat at each business. So it's designed just to be a fun day. It's family friendly. Go come out with your partner and go from place to place and sample something sweet.
So is it like, is every business going to have like a different kind of chocolate, or is it kind of up to the, oh, they are going to have a different, oh, wow.
Yes, it's up to each business to decide what they want to do. And it's basically just something flavored chocolatey. So it could be a truffle, it could be a cake pop, it could be a cupcake, it could be a chocolate teeny, it could be hot chocolate, it could be a chocolate espresso. So anything chocolatey that you can consume is game.
So how did this idea come up?
We've seen other downtowns do something very similar, and we just thought this would be something really, really fun to do in Bemidji. It's, you know, we're coming down off of Christmas, we're in the midst of January, and there's not a lot to do. So we just thought, what could we do that would be fun, something for people to look forward to?
And how many businesses are participating? Do you know that number yet?
Okay. Yes. So we are actually capping it at 15 businesses because we want to make sure that everybody can get to all the businesses and collect all their chocolates within one day. If you get too many businesses, it gets tough to get to each one and shop, you know. I mean, there will be some restaurants that are participating and retailers. So, yeah, we hope people can spend a little bit of time at each business, too.
That's great. Is anybody doing something strange, like a chocolate-covered pickle or anything like that?
They could. We don't know yet.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Still kind of in the midst of planning. People are figuring out what they want to do at this point. There's kind of a rule that it needs to be gourmet. We don't want Snicker bars and Reese's candy bars. It needs to be something special and packaged individually. So unless it's a beverage, that then you would consume at that business.
Or a chocolate fountain. That would be fun.
Oh, yeah, a chocolate fountain. Mm-hmm.
So around this time of year, what kind of is like Valentine's Day, is it starting business, starting to pick up from the holidays around this time of year? Is this kind of an idea to like get that start the new 2026 shopping season?
Great question. And that would definitely depend on the business. For example, Chocolates Plus, this is one of their busiest holidays of the year. So Valentine's Day is huge for them. For other businesses like Heidi and I and Mackenzie Place and other stores that have gifts, I mean, we definitely have those that come in to buy gifts for their loved ones or family. But it is, in general, a slower time of year. So we're coming off the holiday busyness, and this is a time when businesses are kind of getting ready for the summer months, for the fall, for the next holiday season, planning, cleaning, doing projects they need to get done. And we don't get a ton of foot traffic. So we're hoping this is a way that we can generate, start that foot traffic earlier than in previous years.
Sure. It sounds like a lot of fun. How do you get tickets?
Great question. So tickets are not for sale yet. Okay. Ticket sales are going to go live on Monday, January 19th. We are using the Eventbrite platform for people to purchase their ticket. So you could go directly to Eventbrite. I also would encourage listeners to follow the Bemidji Downtown Alliance on Facebook. We'll be posting a Facebook event there with a link to get the tickets. Each ticket is $20 per person. And we really want to reiterate that tickets are limited in order for our businesses to plan exactly how many treats they need to have. We needed to limit the number of tickets. So we want to make sure that people know you have to have a ticket to participate. And if this is something that you want to do, and we hope you do, get in there and get your tickets starting January 19th.
Is there a cutoff date for getting tickets? Like, can you get tickets up to the day as well?
If they're still available. So if we hit that cap earlier, then tickets won't be on sale come the day of. But if we don't hit that cap, then of course, yes, they'll be available.
All right. So I assume buying the tickets online, so then go to business and you kind of like show the, is there like a QR code or anything like that? Or is it just like?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's going to be a designated starting spot for everybody, which is going to be the Hair Fair Salon and Spa. They have a great parking lot there, so people will be able to check in there. They'll receive a bag for their chocolate treats for the day. They'll receive a map and a punch card. And so from there, they can go to any of the participating businesses. It doesn't need to be in a certain order, but that will be the starting point.
That's a great point that you're giving a bag for the treats, because in my mind, I was like, I would just eat them. But 15 is a lot for one day for chocolatey treats.
Well, I mean, if you're a quitter, come on.
I also wanted to mention the chocolate walk is going to be from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. So we're hoping that people can come downtown, like Molly said, shop if they want to. Maybe they can have lunch or dinner beforehand or afterwards as well.
Excellent. Right. So is there anything else on the horizon for the Bemidji Downtown Alliance in 2026?
We have started our planning. I don't know. Do we want to share all the exciting things now or keep it secret?
Go for it, Molly. Maybe talk about Foot Shop and
We want the scoop.
you're here first on KBS.
We will do a spring version of Sip, Shop, and Stroll. And that will be around Mother's Day fishing opener. Last year, we did it a little earlier. This year, we're going to try a later date for that when it feels a little more springy around here. Paul Bunyan Day was a huge hit last year, so we'll have some more fun things coming revolved around Paul Bunyan Day. Of course, we have Crazy Days. What am I missing?
Well, and then we're back into the holidays.
Yes, I know. Yes, that's true.
Here we go.
There will be other things that fall in there too, I'm sure, but those are the big ones.
So I'm just curious, how often does the Bemidji Downtown Alliance meet together to like discuss the upcoming events?
So we have an official group of board members, and that's the Bemidji Downtown Alliance board that meets once a month. We have a subcommittee from there that's our event planning committee, and it varies. I would say we meet about once a month. When we have a big event coming up, we may meet more often. But this is a new committee for us. We just established it approximately a year ago, and it's a group of like-minded business owners who just want to come together, work together, offer something or fun events for our community and encourage people to come downtown and see what we have to offer.
That's great. We love having people downtown too. So
yeah, absolutely. All right. So tickets will be going on sale this Monday, January 19th. And so what you mentioned on the VG Downtown Alliance website to get those tickets.
The Facebook page for sure. The website, we're hoping to have it up on the website, but I would start with the Facebook event that the BDA creates. It'll for sure be on there.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Molly and Heidi, for joining us this morning. And the Chocolate Walk will be going on Valentine's Day.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Excellent. All right, we're going to play a tune for you. This is Yasmin Lacey with the song Longest Way Round.
If I never left, how could I return? With all of the lessons that I've learned, some of them lessons, others a curse, but they got me here. If maybe I'd known there was an easier way, would I have grown and been open to change? In the darkness, I build flames that fought my fears. Maybe I was all. The light. And when you do, there'll be fruit on the vine. Cause I twisted and turned day and night. It took some time. My heart took a bruising to get here. But to lose is a grateful thing. Cause it rains and it pours, then it gets clean. Now I'm
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm A. Martinez. Millions of people in North Carolina are newly free of their medical debt. A state program wiped out $6.5 billion worth of debt last year, and it didn't cost the state a dollar. Alex Olgan has a story.
On a routine trip to the mailbox this October, Dawn Daly Mack almost threw away an important letter.
I saw this and I'm like, oh, this looks like it's either a bill or some junk. I opened it up and it said, your medical bill has been paid. And I'm like, right. You know, I didn't believe it.
But it was real. 60-year-old Daily Mac is one of 2.5 million North Carolinians who got this letter from undue medical debt. The hospital wiped away her $459 bill for a 2014 emergency room visit for a sinus infection.
I was the only breadwinner in the family, and so I was not able to pay the bill.
At the time, Dawn was caring for her disabled husband and two teenagers. She was working as a nurse at the very same hospital trying to collect from her.
When a bill, you know there's no way you're going to pay it, it becomes a non-bill to you. And you just kind of set it aside and, you know, deal with the things that seem to be important in your life. And that's what happened with this.
The state got all 99 hospitals to get rid of old debt dating back a decade. And going forward, they agreed to prevent people in Mac's income range from accumulating debt in the first place. North Carolina hospitals now automatically give discounts if patients who are in a family of four make less than $96,000 a year.
I'm excited for the people of North Carolina because of just the unique and amazing approach that they're taking and how impactful we think that's going to be.
That's Allison Sesso, CEO of Undue Medical Debt. Typically, the organization buys up medical debt for pennies on the dollar and erases it. In North Carolina, they did something different. The charity worked with hospitals to figure out whose debt to eliminate. Then Sesso's team sent them letters saying it was erased. Former Secretary of Health Cody Kinsley organized this. He enticed hospitals to cooperate by tying extra Medicaid dollars to participating. For him, the issue is personal.
My second year of college, my father had a massive stroke.
Kinsley's mom was really worried about how to pay for his care.
A lot of the anxiety that she was navigating while also trying to care for my father was, we don't have health insurance. Oh my God, we're going to end up in debt.
Luckily, Kinsley got a discount from the hospital. He says it shouldn't be up to the patient's family to ask. That's why, as Secretary of Health, he shifted the responsibility. Now, hospitals must figure out who should get cheaper care.
This was also really important for me to try to change this relationship so that people can walk in the front door of a hospital in an emergent situation and not feel like they're taking both their health and their financial well-being at risk in that moment.
Other states are taking action. Arizona and New Jersey used state dollars to buy and forgive medical debt. Oregon and Illinois screened patients for financial assistance. Colorado and New York banned debt from credit reports. The federal government recently rolled back that same protection. Heather Howard at Princeton University directs the State Health and Value Strategies Program. She's encouraged to see all these states tackle this $220 billion problem, but help is uneven.
Your zip code is going to determine the protections you have.
She thinks federal rules are necessary, especially as President Trump's healthcare policies are expected to lead to 14 million more people without insurance.
We shouldn't be talking about like a static problem. The problem is going to grow.
The looming Medicaid cuts and more people without health insurance mean hospitals are bracing for more unpaid care. The North Carolina Healthcare Association, which represents hospitals, say those cuts could make sustaining these efforts more challenging. For NPR News, I'm Alex Olgan.
This is NPR News.
That is Morning Edition here on the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson.
Good morning. We receive support from the Lake Country Journal, a local lifestyle magazine sharing stories about places to go, things to do, and people to know in Lake Country. More at lakecountryjournal.com.
And we receive support from the Mental Health Crisis Response Team of Itasca County. This crisis intervention service is a program of First Call for Help 211. And provides free crisis assessments, stabilization services, referrals, and resourcing to residents of any age who are in crisis. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by dialing 211. So, coming up in a bit, we are going to have Area Voices, where I had a conversation with the Central Lakes College Performing Arts Center. They are going to do a stage reading of The Pillow Man, and they are also going to have another production going on a couple weeks after of the show called The Cottage.
Oh, wow. So they're busy over there. Yeah.
And here in Bemidji, we've got Clue coming up at the end of this month as well.
Yes.
And I know the Grand Rapids Players are going to be doing Fiddler on the Roof in March. Theater season, Heather, is in full swing.
We are spoiled for choice. I do know that the cast of Clue is pretty elite this time, so you'll definitely not want to miss that one if you're in the Bemidji area.
It is an elite cast, and then somehow they let me sneak in.
Yes. How is it going? Do you have your lines memorized?
I do have my lines memorized. The problem is I don't have other people's lines memorized.
Sure.
In terms of I have been a little jumping a little too quickly to say my line when people aren't finished saying their lines.
That's okay.
That's my problem. I'm working on it.
Right. But at least you realize it. That's the thing, right? You know that something to work on.
What's nice about this play is there's a bunch of characters, so I don't have as many lines to memorize, yeah, which is great. The problem also is that we all have just like rapid one-liners to each other. So the lines before mine may have nothing to do with what I'm about to say.
Okay.
So it's a little trickier to remember, okay, when is this line supposed to happen?
Yeah, kind of the puzzle pieces don't quite fit together. They're more just squares rather than puzzle pieces, right?
But I'm happy to report our director last night said we're doing better than he thought we were. So we are well on our way, folks.
That's a compliment, I think. I think that's good.
But I'm very excited for the set design because the floor in the hallway is going to be cut up into like yellow blocks like it is on the board game.
Oh, that's neat.
So be on the lookout for that if you come to the Bemidji Community Theater's production of Clue.
I love set design and set designers. I just think it's so interesting to watch them work because they know what's going to look weird close up and great from a few yards away, you know? And it's so interesting. Like, I got to watch some of this process when Alex was in his play last year, and I'm just in awe of the people who make it all happen, including the lights and everything else that goes on backstage.
Yeah, it's such a fun team effort. Like, even last night, we had someone working on costumes in the basement. We had someone working on props for the stage design. Yeah. We had our assistant director reading lines for the people that were gone last night. It really is like a huge team effort to get these plays going. And so, Heather, I was wondering, have you ever dabbled in theater productions?
No.
You haven't?
No, outside of the ones that were required, you know, during school. No, not so much. I would be way more interested in doing costuming or doing some of that, you know, stage work. And
would you ever direct?
Oh, I don't think so. No, I don't think I have the skills for that, unfortunately. But it is, it's so interesting from an outsider perspective, just watching everyone come together. Because when you say community theater, it really, really is community theater, you know, and it's neat to have those things, see those things come together, even from people like, you know, bringing things from home to use as props and altering them. And it's really cool to watch.
Yeah. And it's like, it's fun seeing your neighbors on stage, you know, kind of thing.
It is. Or your coworkers.
Yeah.
It's great. I'm really excited for Clue. I want to learn about the Pillow Man.
Yeah, so Pillow Man, it's written by Martin McDonough, who was a playwright first, but now is a filmmaker.
Okay.
And he made the movies in Bruges. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, yes. That's a great movie.
He also made Three Billboards Outside of
Ebbing,
Missouri.
Yes.
And then he also made The Banshees of
Inisherin? Yeah,
which I absolutely love those movies. So
I haven't seen that last one, but hey, that's fantastic. The title is so intriguing to me.
Someone in Bemidji put on this play at the Railroad Folk School years ago.
Oh, okay.
And I went into it knowing nothing about it. I just saw the title and the director I was a fan of, so I went to the show not knowing about it. And what, I don't want to spoil it at all. I think it's so fun to just go into it knowing nothing about it. But what they did in, like, I want to say it's like the last quarter of the play surprised me.
Okay. All right. Well, now I'm even more intrigued. Also, Fiddler on the Roof. One of the most amazing musicals, some of the most memorable songs. So we're so lucky. That's so great.
A show I would love to do a musical is Company. I would love to be in Company, but I know that would be a hard one to do.
Okay.
Like, especially, did you ever see that? There was a documentary about the making of Company, or the making of the album company.
No.
Where they had the original Broadway players singing their parts.
Oh, no. I don't know anything about it, actually.
Okay, so they have the part where Elaine Stritch singing Here to the Ladies. And it's a tough song to sing. I don't know how she did it every night on Broadway. But, like, she was just, like, so tired, and you could tell it. And they were just like, it's just not quite right. And she's given it all in these performances. And it was very interesting.
Cool. Oh, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, so you are listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle with Heather Johnson. Coming up, like I said, is going to be Area Voices. But coming up next is the Up North Report. We receive support from the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering a workshop in January. Micro Mosaics Workshop January 24th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 9 Central Street West in Bagley. More information and registration at bagleyarts.org or on Facebook.
And we receive support from Hug Hydronics, committed to making in-floor heating simple, providing in-floor heating solutions for both commercial and residential. More information at hughydronics.com.
Now here is the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. The lead U.S. attorney prosecuting many of Minnesota's social services fraud cases is resigning. The Minnesota Star Tribune reported Tuesday that Joe Thompson is among several other top prosecutors resigning from the office. The move comes after top Justice Department officials have been pushing the Minnesota U.S. Attorney's Office to investigate Rebecca Good, the wife of Renee Good, who was shot and killed by ICE agent Jonathan Ross last week. The New York Times reported Monday that federal investigators are looking into the Goods' possible connections to activist groups, in addition to the actions of Ross, prompting the resignation of six prominent prosecutors. Thompson was appointed Minnesota's interim U.S. attorney in May 2025, until Daniel Rosen took the office last October. During his brief tenure, he prosecuted those responsible for the sprawling Feeding Our Future scandal, as well as Vance Bolter, who shot and killed former House Speaker Melissa Hortman, her husband Mark, and dog Gilbert, and seriously injured State Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette in June. A Republican state lawmaker announced he has filed articles of impeachment against Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Representative Mike Weiner from Long Prairie posted the articles of impeachment onto his Facebook page Monday. The document includes four articles justifying impeachment, alleging Walz is committing corrupt conduct and violating his oath of office. The articles allege Walz knowingly concealed widespread fraud in the state's Department of Human Services, interfered with oversight and investigation into the fraud, prioritized political narratives over disclosure of fraud, and allowed statutory safeguards to be ignored or weakened. In Minnesota, the House of Representatives has the sole power of impeachment through the concurrence of a majority of all its members. All impeachments are tried by the Senate, and a conviction requires a two-thirds majority. The impeachment articles come after some Republicans in the state have called on Walz to resign, which Walz has said he will not do. Two sitting senators on opposite sides of the aisle announced their intentions to seek re-election. State Senator Grant Hochschild will run for a second term representing the northeasternmost part of Minnesota. The Hermantown DFLer is the last Democrat representing rural northern Minnesota. He defeated Babbitt Mayor Andrea Zupancich by just over 700 votes in 2022. They'll likely face off once more this year in District 3, as Zupancich has also announced a campaign. Hochschild says his priorities include focusing on families, helping seniors retire with dignity, and growing the regional economy. District 7 State Senator Rob Farnsworth also announced a run. The neighboring district represents most of the Iron Range. The Hibbing Republican says his priorities include oversight and accountability measures to address fraud, lowering the cost of living, and supporting mining and job creation. The Hibbing School District has a new acting superintendent. In an emergency meeting Friday, the Hibbing School Board selected Carrie McDonald as the district's acting superintendent. McDonald comes from the district's current administrative team, serving as director of teaching and learning and the Blue Jacket Career Academy director. She previously served as principal of Greenhaven Elementary School in Hibbing. The move comes after Superintendent Rick Aldrich announced he would resign last week due to a health condition. For likely the first time ever, a high school hockey game will be broadcast in Ojibwe. Megan Buffington has the story.
Yeah!
On November 28th, Native American Heritage Day, the Minnesota Wild hosted a first-of-its-kind Ojibwe language broadcast. Inspired by the game, the Rock Ridge Indigenous Education Program reached out to the announcers, asking if they'd be interested in a trip to the Iron Range.
This is a huge, huge honor for them to come here to our community, and this is big for the Indigenous community.
Maria Potterze is Rock Ridge's Indigenous Education Director. The Ojibwe broadcasts will cover the girls' game against Cloquet Esco Carlton on January 20th and the boys' game against Grand Rapids on January 30th. The games will be streamed on the Rock Ridge YouTube page and broadcast live on KBFT, Boisport Tribal Community Radio. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
The Up North Report here on the Wednesday morning show. Don't forget, you can always check out the latest Up North Report on our website, kaxe.org, along with the set list, Bright Spot, Album of the Week write-up, all sorts of stuff on our website, kaxe.org. And now that we're getting into New Year, things are starting to pop up a lot on the website. We had a lot of best of 2025 content. And now we're beginning the best of 2026 content, maybe. Here we go.
We're starting. That's the hard thing, is that you have to remember to start keeping track. Like, I really love this album of the week, and I started off last year so good, and I had a list, and then I lost the list.
So one goal I have this year, so I follow this music website, Stereo Gum.
Oh, sure.
And they basically post all the time about like the latest new music, like so and so just announced an album, here's the new song, like kind of thing. And I'm trying to keep up to date with that. Last year I would fall behind. If you miss 2 days, you're in trouble, because it's a bunch of songs that can come out in 2 days.
2 days,
yeah. So there's music coming out every day, Heather.
So I usually try to catch up on the weekend, because doesn't albums come out on Friday still, right?
Correct.
Okay. So that's when I try to catch up, and I'll give them like the 30-second preview unless I find like, oh my gosh, I think I'll really like this. And then I'll kind of give the 30-second preview to the whole album, and then I'll hopefully listen to the whole album. It's a process, but I try to keep up with that weekly. I don't know if I could do it daily.
Well, you know, if you do it in bursts, like 5 songs at a time, you can get through it.
There's so much media that I want to listen
Heather,
watch.
Amen. There is so much media I need to consume out there.
I know. And now I'm going back and forth between 3 books, and I'm kind of like, well, which one do I want to commit to next? And I think I just have to pick. But there's so much. I wish I had somebody who would like concierge this for me and be like, okay, this is the next one you're reading. And I would just be like, okay, that's great. You have taken the choice off my to-do list. But there's just, and I have such a wealth of amazing new and old and very old and just things that are amazing that I want to delve into. But
see, that's the other thing, is like, not only is there new stuff coming out all the time, but there's so much in the history of like movies and music that I want to listen and or watch. And it's a tough world, but I love having so many choices to make.
Right. And then I have my old time radio habit too. So I'm catching up on things from, you know, the 30s and the 40s. And I got the most amazing gift over the holidays of these wonderful cassettes that are old time radio shows. Ooh. And so I'm listening to those, and they're just precious.
Does it have ads in them too?
Some do.
Oh, cool.
They're
like
really
Colgate.
Well, I don't know about that, but so if I'm listening, like usually in podcast form to some of them, depending on who the sponsors were. If it's something sponsored by Jell-O, like I love the Jell-O ads.
Why? Like, what makes them special?
Because it's just funny. They're very peppy, and I'm not going to sing it for you.
So they have a theme song too?
There's a theme song. It's pretty great. My kid
can you at least hum it?
No, I can't do a Jell-O ad. Come on, we're community radio.
That's true.
But yes, yeah, so many things that I want to know about and learn about and just enjoy. And I need a concierge to tell me this is the next thing.
So, speaking of that, like last night, I got done with practice around 8:15, kind of thing, and so Tuesday nights, I like to go to bed early because I got to wake up early for the Wednesday morning show. So I had to go through my whole watch list of like, okay, what's an hour and a half type movie? So at least like time constraints can kind of help narrow your decision mm-hmm. down a bit.
It's true. But then I have decision paralysis.
Really?
a little bit.
Well, do you think it's because you're like, if I don't like this, then I'm going to be like, oh man, I wish I would have watch this instead.
Yeah. Oh, maybe that's part of it. Maybe. Or just not knowing what I'm in the mood for, I think.
Yeah, that is actually a great
point. These are such first world problems. They're non-problems.
So we want to hear from you. What are you hoping to get to in 2026, either in book form?
Yeah.
Movie form? Old-timey radio form? Maybe music form? Let us know.
Who are my other old-timey radio people? They must be out there.
Text us at 218-326-1234.
Yeah, and to keep track, I think to keep track of your favorites from the year, that takes some doing. Because by December, I may not remember that I really loved something in February.
See, this is why I have my little apps. I've got Letterboxd app to keep track of all the movies I watch, and I keep an ongoing list of my favorite movies of the year. And then I have Goodreads to mm-hmm. keep track of the books I read during the year. And then I have Last.fm, which keeps track of the music I listen to through the year. So that at the end of the year, I go through albums most played throughout the year, and it gives me the whole list.
See, you're so organized.
You have to be in this day and age.
I'm a pencil and paper person, and I'm failing. So.
All right. So we're going to play a tune for you. This is a new one from Rachel and Bill Ray. The album is called West of Broadway. This song is called Forever Nevertheless.
This is the third time we're getting hitched till death or an itch to a spot, dear. This wedding we're forgetting about forever, 'cause forever never lasts for very long.
We'll call it off. That's quite enough of you, dear. Of course, we'll say we'll stay divorced forever, but forever never lasts for very long.
Love is a perfect circle.
Only a perfect jerk will change your routine. Say try a new scene, but we know it's better to vacillate between two poles forever.
This year I'll love you.
Next year it's hate.
I think that's great, don't you, dear?
The only thing we know that's true forever is forever never lasts for very long. Ex-husband, ex-wife will always know better which buttons are the ones to push forever.
Rethrow the flowers,
replant the kiss.
Nothing's amiss today, dear.
A fool will say we'll feel this way forever, but forever never lasts for very long.
We know the curtain falls on certain happy songs.
Thank God forever.
Thank God forever.
Thank God forever never lasts for very long.
And that was Rachel and Villeray with Forever Never Lasts from their album West of Broadway. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show here with Heather Johnson, and I am Andrew DeZingle. Coming up next is Area Voices. We receive support from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com.
And support comes from Boreal Brushworks Painting in Bemidji. Since 2009, Boreal Brushworks has provided full-service interior and exterior painting services throughout northern Minnesota. More information about estimates and services available at borealbrushworkspainting.com.
We receive support from Paperstorm, providing on-site paper shredding services to commercial and residential customers throughout central and northern Minnesota. Accepting old paperwork during tax season with secure shredding services. More information at paperstorm.net. Now it's time for Area Voices. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm the producer of Area Voices. Now, I've been in the performing arts for over 2 decades now, and a show that has interested me since I first heard about it was The Pillow Man. So imagine my excitement when I heard the Central Lakes College Performing Arts Center would be having a stage reading of The Pillow Man on January 23rd. Today, I'll be interviewing two people behind the production, and we get into such topics as what the benefits and challenges are of performing a stage reading.
I'm Joey Yao. I am the director of the Central Lakes College Performing Arts Center, and so I am producing this show, and I'm also in the cast playing Katurian.
And I am Rebecca Timmons. I am the artistic director of this particular show.
So what is The Pillow Man about?
The Pillow Man is a 2003 play by Martin McDonagh. It's about a writer in a totalitarian state who is being interrogated about the gruesome content of his short stories and their similarities to a number of murders that are happening in the town. The thing that has always stuck with me about this play is that it looks at a world in which there are people who want to oppress creativity, who want to find ways of diminishing the power of the storyteller, the power of the arts, the power of anyone to change the narrative that the world sees besides those in authority. At the same time, it has that kind of high-minded approach to this is the problem with totalitarianism, this is the problem with dictatorship, but it also is just a really chilling and funny story. Martin McDonagh is just famous for being able to tell these sometimes very bleak stories, but in such a way that it is just electric to watch and funny, and the comedy and humor allows you to sit with the awful stuff a little bit more easily. It's a really touching play. It's one that's quite powerful, and I'm excited that we're able to present it in this kind of stage reading, stripped back format. It's not a show that is going to appeal to all of our audiences, but there's a niche audience out there that I think will really gravitate towards it.
So it's going to be a stage reading version of the show. How did the decision come to do it that way?
So we have a main season of shows that we do quite a lot of musicals. We do a lot of comedy. The Performing Arts Center has been really focused on developing opportunities for all ages to participate in the arts. We have a really vibrant and growing youth theater program. We do shows that try to have large casts, and we'll try to appeal to a multi-generational audience. The stage reading shows that we're doing, we are trying to look at notable works that are of a smaller cast size and probably won't appeal to our full audience, but are still ones that our actors would love to take a turn kind of grappling with and working with, because it's so much fun as an actor to be given a script that is so challenging and with characters that are so rich, and also to give our audience something a little bit different to see. So this format allows us to kind of economically do shows that probably wouldn't attract our full audience, but do so in a way that is really fun, both for our audience and for our actor community. And that's a lot of our mission, is not just presenting artworks to the community, but it's growing practitioners and lovers of the performing arts. And this is one of those tools that we use to do that.
I have to say that I have an extraordinarily seasoned and talented cast on top of everything. But one thing about using the scripts, it allows us to move more quickly in the process of getting this ready for presentation. So it allows us to move more quickly because we don't have to think about the memorization part. And because I have such a great cast and we only have 3 weeks to put this together, it really works well because we don't have to spend a lot of early time with the memorization and learning all about the characters. The people in this cast have come prepared. As I said, they're seasoned, they've come prepared. And so they know what to do. They know how to interpret these characters. And because they can read the script, although they know it well and don't have to keep their nose in the book, they can read the script and they are freer to act, to do the character.
The performance is going to be one night only on January 23rd. What was kind of the reasoning for that decision?
We've done a few stage readings in the past. We do a new work series where we will take play submissions and we'll do a reading of them where we rehearse them for a couple of weeks. And that was kind of the thought behind this, is that let's do this as an event, not as a typical show that would have multiple chances to attend, but this is just a one night only special event where we get to introduce the audience who isn't familiar with this show to this playwright. We stay very busy at the Performing Arts Center. We do 24 productions per year. That's a combination of our community theater shows, which we're almost always rehearsing one of them. Right now, we're rehearsing this one and another at the same time. And we have our cultural arts series where we're bringing artists from across the country to perform. So we stay quite busy. And the following week after this show, we have a concert. And then 2 weeks after that, we open a five-day run of another play. So we try to find the moments where it's like, having a one-night-only event, I think, adds a certain kind of special quality to something and sets it apart further from our main stage season.
So this is a question for both of you, because I'm interested in both your perspectives from the acting side of things and directing it. So The Pillow Man is kind of not as well-known as some plays, so probably most likely would be like the audience's first encounter with this show. Does that add a level of excitement for you as a performer and you as a director to kind of, for lack of a better term, set the stage in these people's minds of what makes up the show, The Pillow Man?
It's always really exciting to think as an actor that you are kind of setting the standard for what someone's expectation of a show is. The best compliments that we get producing our community theater season here is when we have people who say, I saw this when it toured on Broadway and I liked your production even more. When that happens, it just fills you with nothing but warm and fuzzy thoughts. So the opportunity to introduce this show to the community and to establish for them what it could be, I mean, I hope as the producer, I hope that this is a show that we find the right audience for, because this is a play that, you know, it's very heavy, but I think if we have an audience that is really into the true crime genre, if we have an audience who's really into the macabre or horror, this is going to be something very different that's not offered around here. And we try really hard to offer things that no one else in the community or the nearby communities are offering. I often think, when I'm choosing our season, I want to do things that people would otherwise have to drive down to the Twin Cities to see. And as an actor, it's very intimidating, because you hope that the standard that you're setting for the audience who's new to this is a good one, and that they walk away saying, I would see this show again, not, I never want to touch this playroom ever again.
Well, I think I could echo everything you just said. It's exciting because it's something very different than this group usually does. I knew of the show for several years, but it was pretty new to me too until I dove in and really understood it. I maybe had some misconceptions about it. Maybe some of the people in the audience will feel the same way. But I was very excited to direct it because it's a challenge. It's so complex and multi-layered that it's a challenge for me to understand all those layers and to motivate the actors to portray them in the way I want them to be portrayed and the way I think will really tell the audience the story in a way they can understand.
and maybe take internally and think about after they leave. Always want to do that. Always want to leave audiences thinking.
Yeah, so we kind of touched on this earlier and you just touched on it now, but for you as a director, you mentioned that like you've been able to go things more quickly doing it as the stage reading version. What are some other like kind of like benefits and challenges of directing a stage reading production?
Yeah, one huge challenge is not so much for the director, but the actors, because they have to hold this book and they maybe have to hold some other prop as well and deal with those two things, or be in a position where they're lying down and have to hold the book. So we have to work around those kinds of obstacles. I think that's the biggest thing. Or, and I don't think these actors will do this, but maybe there's a little danger of either reading the book too much or thinking you know it too well and losing your place. So they have to work on that's always very smooth.
That's scarier for me as an actor, is like going, like saying, oh, I've got this, and then realizing I'm off, and then having to find my place on the
where
page.
Are you? Yeah.
Like, where am I? Because what we want is for the audience to forget the books are there. If we're doing a good enough job, they'll notice them at the beginning, and then gradually they'll accept that conceit, and then they won't be an issue anymore. But that is the danger, is that if we get too over our skis and then lose our place, it's easy to kind of pull the audience out of the world, and you have to work to get them back in.
What do you hope the audience takes away from this production?
I hope that they can look at this and see these extraordinary stories that may at first blush or on the face of it seem very far-fetched and inconceivable, but realize that in our world, it's really not. That things that happen in these stories can happen here for us in the real world.
I hope that people walk away from the play knowing that for our community, that we can do things that suit all sorts of different people. We can do shows that are challenging. We can do shows that ask a lot of the audience and that leave them with a lot to think about. The reason I asked Rebecca to direct this is because Rebecca directed our production of The Exonerated last year, which was based on true stories of people who were on death row and then later exonerated for their crimes. It was a type of play that we don't typically see around here. And there was a lot of gratitude from the audience that came to it for us to be able to present something like that in the Brainerd Lakes area. I mentioned before that our reading series is meant to look at notable and challenging plays. And they're challenging not just for the actors, but sometimes they can be challenging for the audience. They invite the audience to really think. And that's something that I'm hopeful that people leave this play feeling like they had a great time, but also that it gives them something to consider for the future. I think one thing that's really neat about this for me is Patrick Spradlin, who for 30 years led the Performing Arts Center and the theater program at Central Lakes College. He is my predecessor, and we have worked together but never on stage before. And in this show, I get to act alongside him. So this has been just a really special opportunity for me to work with someone who did so much to build up not just the theater program here, but the performing arts and entertainment industry in the community. So I've been really touched by the opportunity to work alongside him in this way.
And I have to add that I'm always thrilled to be able to work with really talented actors. They really are. I choose my actors very carefully. And it's really fun to work with these people who I've known for a long time as their director.
Rebecca Timmons and Joey Yao have been my guests today. The Pillow Man will be performed on Friday, January 23rd at the Dryden Theater. The show is free to attend, but seating is limited. You can register for seats at clcperformingarts.com. Area Voices is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. And that was Area Voices here on the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson.
Hey, happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. We're wrapping things up here on the Wednesday Morning Show, and then we're going to hand things over to Kari Hedlund for Headwaters and tune in this morning for a live session with Longville folk singer Charlie Wagner around 10:15 this morning. So you're going to want to to check that out.
Absolutely. And support comes from Watermark Art Center in downtown Bemidji, with four galleries, art classes for adults and children, and a retail art gallery. Shop 505. The center is accessible and open to the public. More at watermarkartcenter.org.
And this is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org. Looking at the weather today, it's going to be sunny skies with highs near 12 degrees, northwest winds 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, slight chance of snow in the morning, increasing clouds, lows near 2 degrees, south winds 5 to 10.